Oh, no, are we? I don't know. Is that where you want to start the show?
Hello?
Are you there?
This is Gloria. Is this Dave?
No, Dave is here, though. I
don't need to talk to him, but he's supposed to be interviewing me in 15 minutes. I'm in Madison.
Right. Call back in 15 minutes, then. Thanks a lot.
Absolute madhouse down here. I cannot guarantee that.
Oh,
I've never seen anything like this.
She says it's entire madhouse. Maybe you want to go right to her.
You know what? Right now, there's such a huge crowd coming around the corner. When they come around the corner, I don't think you'll be able to hear me.
That's okay. I think I'll just give my seat to Dave, and he'll be the next voice you hear, and thanks for making the call.
Unbelievable
stuff going down in Madison right now.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Welding the windows. No problem. I'm happy to.
And I have been here almost every day, and I'm just blown away. Can you hear what's happening?
Go ahead and do some pattern, some continuity here. Again, Gloria, calling in from Madison. We're going straight to it right now because she says it's so chaotic that right now that she doesn't think she'll be able to possibly make the call in a later in 15 minutes or so. So here's Dave.
Hello, Gloria.
Yeah.
You can hear us?
Yeah, who is this?
Okay, this is David Johnson. You called in at the last part of another show, but that's okay. I mean, so I know circumstances up there are quite chaotic and stuff.
Right, and like I said, I don't think that, you know, I saw the time and I thought if I wait 15 minutes, it's just starting now, and it's just going to escalate from this point on for the rest of the day.
Okay, can you explain to us what's going on right now?
Yeah, I'm standing on the square. Okay, I'm on the air right now?
Yes, you are.
My name is Gloria. I'm here in Wisconsin. I've been at this rally almost every day. I'm standing in front of the Capitol and coming around the corner right now, being led by a fire truck. I'm standing on a bench at the medic table because I'm here as a medic. I've never seen so many people, and I've been here, like I said, almost every day. But this fire truck has got flags all over with the power fist of Wisconsin flag rising high above everything else. I can't even tell what's behind them. There's a big solidarity poster, and thousands and thousands and thousands of people have already been marching around the square, but it looks to me like maybe this is where the tractorcade is starting. I can't tell for sure. There's so many people. Yeah, there it is. There's the tractors and the farmers coming around the corner right now.
Okay, can you explain to our listeners how the farmers are gotten involved in this?
Well, the farmers are concerned because, of course, this isn't an attack on unions. This is an attack on the middle class of America. This is an attack on everything that we stand for. You know, 98% of America that is middle or lower class, probably 99%, I don't know. But, you know, it's about our rights being taken away, about the economy and what's happening to it and jobs and losses of jobs and losing the collective bargaining rights is a part of it, most certainly, but farmers are going to lose so much. We all are. I mean, I'm pretty passionate right now, and wow.
Yeah, yes, and I, from what I understand, too, is that a lot of the farmers are angry is because Governor Walker cut them off from the ones who made under a certain income level, cut them off from the state-sponsored health insurance program that you have in Wisconsin.
Yes, and I believe that's true. You know, this bill is 144 pages long, and according to the lawmakers, there's so much in this bill that is not clear. And I think that's what people are upset about. As our heroic 14 has said numerous times, let's put the bill on the table and look at it and negotiate with what's in it so that we understand what's in it, as opposed to being afraid of what we have to lose. And I think that's why everyone, including the farmers, are so passionate about this. Now, here's a group of farm families. These are typical Wisconsin people. Oh, except one of them's carrying a bagpipe. How cool is that? and I'm looking at about 100, 150 farmers that are right in front of this fire truck, and then behind the fire truck are the tractors. They're moving really slowly around the square here, but this is just the beginning of the day. I'm telling you, the 14 Democratic senators are coming back at 3 o'clock this afternoon, and the people are here because this is Wisconsin. As I said, this bill is really about what we stand to lose. And we don't want to lose the things that we have here in Wisconsin. This is a great state. This truck here on the side says, "Thanks, Dale
what
Schultz."
Say, Wisconsin, you said it all.
It's better than any ball game I've ever been to. Oh my gosh! Thank you, Dale Schultz. He's the one courageous Republican that voted against this bill.
Oh, good. That's good to hear. At least there was one. And you know, it's not just Wisconsin, though. I mean, frankly, as far as most people are concerned, you know, right now you guys are in the front lines of trying to stop a nationwide attempt by the corporate interests to basically push us down to third world levels. And you know, we can't allow that to happen. And you know, we're just wish we could be there with you. A lot of us, most of us, and we're just glad that you're taking such a courageous stand and devoting all the time and energy to do what has to be done.
Well, you know, and you're not the first one to say that. I've heard this place called Ground Zero.
Yes.
And as I explained to my daughter earlier today, this is a blueprint bill that is going to go from one state to the next. And that's what's wrong with it. You can't just take a bill and say, oh, let's push it through Wisconsin because our governor has the corporate backing, as many other states do. I don't know how it happened to be that Wisconsin, I think it's because Wisconsin people are really smart. You know, this bill was announced on a Friday at 5 p.m. and some students caught wind of it. And that's where it started. And this was right before Valentine's Day, the Friday before Valentine's Day.
Uh-huh.
And they got it out on the social networks, what this bill entailed. And you're right. This is a national, this to me is an international issue, because if we cannot show the world what democracy is, who can? There's a chant that they're doing here. Daily I hear it. It's, this is what democracy looks like. I don't think that's true, and I'm so tired of hearing it, because the way that our government officials here in Wisconsin have been acting has not been democratic, and I'm ashamed and appalled. Shame is chance that I'm standing behind these days. It's a shame what they have done to democracy, just changing the law as they see fit day by day.
This is Jason Kozlowski, one of the co-hosts. I just wanted to get your impression on something in particular, that especially when this had transpired this week, when they pulled in the state Senate the end run around various quorum and democratic processes, stripping the overtly financial provisions of this bill out in order to pass this, even though the union provisions clearly have fiscal implications. I could tell you from Illinois, I was far from alone, but in our house, we were spitting mad about this. Could you please tell us what the reaction was for you, but also for your fellow Wisconsinites when this all went down the other day?
Spinning mad, that's a wonderful term. It needs to be put in a song, Jim Iman, my friend that's down there. Spinning mad. And that night when that happened, I was actually working in my car. And there's a wonderful site called Defend Wisconsin. I recommend everybody down there in Illinois to take a look at it. And actually, they send texts every time something is going on. I believe that it's the Wisconsin Teachers Union that runs this. Wonderful. It's a tweet, I think. I don't know anything about tweets. But anyway, I got this update that they wanted everybody down to the Capitol because there was a meeting called at 4:15, and they wanted everybody here. Apparently, 7,000 people came. I work 50 miles away, and I could not get away. But I couldn't wait to get on to the live feed. What was amazing about it was that there was so much anger here. And my medic friends that were down here said that it was scary, because there was so much anger. I got down here right away the next day at 8 a.m. as soon as I got off of work, and there were probably 5,000 people down here. That was Thursday. You know, that's a lot of people to show up just on a Thursday when you're in Wisconsin. We're freezing our hands off here, and people are asking what they can donate at the medic table. We tell them hand warmers, because we're freezing down here. But we're here, and we're passionate about it. Well, anyway, so the bottom line is, everybody was extremely angry, and Thursday when all those people were here, we were ready for something to happen. Nothing did. Everybody is maintaining the peace. Today, the energy is electric. I don't feel as much anger anymore. I just feel people coming together, and it's just phenomenal.
Yes, in fact, I got a call from our mutual friend Jim Iman the other night when you called him to report about everyone storming the Capitol building, and it was like, oh my gosh! I mean, it was just getting a little bit of information at that point. There was a lot of concern that this might have been the prelude to calling in the National Guard or whatever, and then the next day, seeing footage from the corporate media, it looked like, of course, the Capitol Police initially tried to hold people back. They looked like they were making at least a half-hearted attempt at doing it. And, of course, later I understand people just started climbing through the windows and they just basically stepped aside. But
that's true. They stepped aside.
Yep.
Most of them, they rotate their crew, obviously, but so many of them have been in solidarity with us. I'm sure you've seen in the media
Yes. Guys
walking around with Cops for Labor posters. You know, they go do their shift and then they take their uniform off and come and walk with us. So this is about everyone. Here's a group of about, 20, 25 people dressed up as cows walking in solidarity. Awesome.
Well, it seems like Governor Walker's, angered everyone else. I imagine the livestock will be next.
Yeah, and I really want to get the word out to people that we should really be doing this in front of the governor's house every
yes,
day.
Yes,
yes. This man is probably home watching his big screen TV, watching Pee Wee Herman or something, probably.
Yes, and also if he goes to church, you need to follow him to church, too.
Exactly. And what's really amazing today, I'm seeing lots of signs with Bible verses on, and people, I saw a sign that said, Fundamental Born Again Baptist Recall Walker.
Oh, excellent.
It's everybody.
Yes.
It's everybody. It's not just any one group of people. It's
well,
just amazing.
I think one positive thing, there's several positive things, but I think one of the positive things coming out of this whole thing is that a lot of working class people that consider themselves conservative Republicans, I think maybe a lot of them are starting to get a wake-up call to what the difference between the lies and the reality here.
Absolutely. He's woken a sleeping giant, and I'm very thankful for that. So, some of us, like my friend Jim Iman, we've been activists all of our thinking days. Since the time I was 12 years old, I've been involved in wanting to know what's going on with the government. So we're pleased as punch that finally people are coming together. It's really amazing and awesome. Hey, I got a guy here, he's giving out some stickers. They say, support working families, pull together. I'm on the radio right now down in Champaign, Urbana. Can I have a couple of those? I'll send them down to my friend there. Okay, I'm going to send you guys some stickers from the rally.
Oh, excellent.
Awesome.
Thanks a lot. He's wearing his, Sesame Street hat or something. They're wearing green and yellow, the farmers. Everybody else is wearing Wisconsin red.
Even the Muppets are organizing,
This
is Jason again. I have a question that, especially from an outsider, I'm interested in that we pay an awful lot of attention here to the way in which media does and doesn't cover stories, especially corporate media. And I get the impression, anyway, that there has been some favorable coverage within the state, or at least it's received extensive coverage, but I'm not sure that that's the case. Could you please tell us a bit about how you feel and how others feel the press has been in Madison and in the state regarding the extensiveness of the coverage, whether or not they've been sympathetic to workers or there's been antipathy towards that? Could you tell us how the media in Wisconsin and in Madison in particular has discussed this issue?
Well, as somebody that's really in the thick of it, I've seen a lot of it, and I will admit that it's hard for me to tell for sure. Number one, I have been television-less for about 30 years, so I'm not real aware of what's going on TV, but I love the internet. But I'm down here, and I'm down here so much, it's like I just got to be in the thick of it, so it's hard for me to see, but daily I hear about things that people are seeing on the news, and there's so many people up and down the streets of Madison when they're talking on their phones, they're talking to their friends, they're talking politics, and it seems that the coverage is favorable from the press. And the clips that I've seen on YouTube and here and there, links that people send to me on Facebook, it looks like it's been pretty favorable, actually. Even a couple of the people on Fox have been kind of challenging. However, even though we're getting that favorable press, why isn't the government listening? I don't get it.
Well, I think
I don't get it.
I think that might have to do a lot with corporate money. I don't think, you know, they're concerned about what the people think. It's who their campaign, donors are and stuff. But that could be a whole topic for a whole program. But, Gloria, listen, thank you so much for calling in. This has been a great live report and stuff. And you're going to be coming down to Champaign-Urbana here sometime in the near future. So can't wait to meet you in person. And we got to get you on Labor's View TV with Jim Iman.
Wonderful. Thanks a lot, and I'm so happy to be able to share this wonderful moment with you. The tractors are still going by.
Okay.
I'm telling you. I don't know. There's probably been at least 50 so far, and there's no
wow.
end in sight.
That's impressive. Thank you so much, Gloria.
Thanks,
right,
Gloria.
Thanks
We're proud of you.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Down at the local mill, worked right up, not a millionaire. I can't pay my bills. The evil man is at my door. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. Well, I had me a wife, two car and a boat. Things got bad now, the boat won't.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the March 12th, 2011 edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, brought to you over the air by WEFT, 90.1 FM radio in Champaign, Illinois, and webcast worldwide at WFT.org. The views and opinions expressed during this hour of programming, those of the speaker, do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of WEFT's management, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Tom to acknowledge some of our underwriters.
This hour of programming is being brought to you by the listeners of WEFT and by the Brotherhood of the Maintenance Way. The Brotherhood of the Maintenance Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour. A democratic union, the BMWE, celebrates the voice for labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that they enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by you, the listeners of WEFT, and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
All right, thank you, Tom. I'm your host, David Johnson, here today with co-host Tom Thomas, who will have some workers' interest news for us us later in the show on the Labor Hour Cultural Corner. Tom's poem for this week from his collection, Cries for Justice, will be a tribute to mothers. Also here with us today is Bob Pelesny, co-host and technical advisor, Bill Gorell, co-host and founder of the Illinois Labor Hour, and Jason Kozlowski, our distinguished co-host and newest co-host, I should say, here with us. And he's going to have a little special biographical piece, if you will, about a famous Irish-American woman activist later on in the show. And since this is the program for St. Patrick's Day, it seemed appropriate, as well as Women's History Month. He also has a few little historical comments as well about this day in labor history. And also we'll be playing a little bit of Irish labor music as well throughout the program. So anyway, here's Tom to kick off this week's edition of Workers' Interest News.
Union workers and teachers, lawmakers and labor organizers announced at an enormous statehouse rally on Thursday that Indiana Republicans and GOP leaders nationwide have gone way too far in pushing agendas that are considered attacks on public education and labor unions. Indiana State Police reported that there were more than 8,000 people gathered outside the State House at the rally's peak, which made it the largest rally at the Indiana State House in a good many years. Nancy Guyot, president of the Indiana AFL-CIO, told the cheering crowd that craftsmen built that State House more than 100 years ago, and they returned Thursday to reclaim it. Ms. Guyot said the working men and women of Indiana have come back to take back the people's house for the people. Indiana Democrats are boycotting their House of Representatives to derail several Republican proposals. A huge banner hung from the State House's west steps that read, "Hoosiers Standing Up for the Middle Class." Some workers wore hard hats and fluorescent yellow work vests, and they were holding union banners and American flags and signs reading, "Stop the War on Workers and We Want the American Dream."
Okay, Tom, this story is out of Working in These Times and by the reporter Michelle Chen. And it says, union battleground shifts from Wisconsin to Ohio and the ballot box. And the standoff in Madison has captured labor's political imagination, although the Republicans have cynically used the nuclear option to ram through the anti-union bill. The battleground will now just shift to other states. Ohio lawmakers are mulling a bill similar to Wisconsin's, which would restrain the collective bargaining rights of some 360,000 state and local employees. Ohio does not need as many votes for a quorum. This means Democrats cannot hold up the voting process by going AWOL, as they did in Wisconsin and are still doing in Indiana, where unions are fighting proposals to further erode union rights and public education. But in Ohio's case, Madison-style people power could be deployed in a more concrete way, according to some lawmakers. House Minority Leader Armand Budish told Bloomberg News that even if the bill initially passes, he and other Democrats will mobilize citizens to thwart the legislation through other channels, through public pressure, and perhaps ultimately the ballot box. Too few to block Republicans from having a quorum, Ohio Democrats are asking for more public involvement and hearings on the bill in an effort to sway opinion, and will seek a ballot issue to repeal it if necessary, Budish said. With Republicans holding a 59-40 seat advantage in the House, Democrats should focus on a repeal referendum, said Representative Robert Hagan, a Democrat from Youngstown. With passage in the House all but certain, Ohio could overtake Wisconsin as a bellwether for the struggle. After the fireworks in Madison, labor activists recognized that the partisan gridlock over collective bargaining rights is merely a proxy battle for a new kind of class antagonism that has emerged from the Great Recession. Ohio's referendum process offers a form of direct democracy that Wisconsin Republicans stridently denied to protesters by ignoring, vilifying, and shutting out demonstrators at the Capitol. They have the ability to get a petition going, and if they get more than 231,000 voter signatures and it's filed within 90 days of the law's approval, they can overturn the ballot initiative. So that number of signatures is 6% of the total votes cast for the governor last year. So that's what they're going to work on in Ohio.
Thanks, Bob. The Wisconsin State Journal is reporting that union contracts, which had been extended for nearly 2 years, covering about 39,000 workers, are set to expire Sunday, March 13th. Included among the nearly 20 expiring agreements are contracts covering non-building trades workers, administrative and technical support staff, security and public safety, and professional services workers represented by the Wisconsin State Employees Union, WSEU. Various provisions of the recently passed anti-union legislation will be phased in over the next few months, such as the termination of dues deductions from paychecks, greater deductions from paychecks for pensions, and higher health insurance premiums. Currently, recall efforts targeting Republican state senators are underway, with the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, PCCC, spearheading and raising funds for the effort. Eight Republicans in all are eligible for recall, though six are likely targets. Should three lose recall votes and Democrats replace them, the balance of power in the state Senate will dramatically shift. Polls currently indicate that citizens would right now vote to recall two Republican senators. Not to be overlooked with the eventuality of legal challenges to the terms of the anti-union bill and how it passed the Senate, it is essential to note that there is a statewide election on April 5th, less than a month away, for a seat on the state Supreme Court. The election is between Republican David Prosser and Democrat Joanne Kloppenburg. Expect this to be a hotly contested, well-attended, and expensive election for the seat, since currently four Republicans and three Democrats comprise the state Supreme Court. For those interested, Governor Walker is eligible for recall beginning January 2012.
As Egyptian citizens celebrate their first victory on the way to democracy, some are asking whether the fast-spreading strikes were the straw that broke Hosni Mubarak's back. The following is a brief report written from two pieces which really appeared in Labor Notes. On February 9th, just 2 days before Mubarak stepped down, more than 20,000 workers walked out on strike. Kamal Abbas, director of the Center for Trade Union and Worker Services in Cairo, told Labor Notes, "This day in the revolution could be named for the labor unions. They have moved all over with more than 20 strikes in the railroads and also textiles, nurses and doctors, a hospital, and government-owned factories, and also in private factories." Abbas added that women workers from the hospital and textile workers made up a significant portion of the protesters, adding that 8 million people in the country are participating in the protests. There are a million people in Tahrir Square, and there are thousands of workers among them in the People's Movement. They are learning us lessons. Of course, the working class is apt to organize, and they have been moving in a very deliberate, organized way to make demands. And this seems to be increasingly an international trend that has definitely hit the United States here. Tom?
In order to discuss the impact of health care systems and the Affordable Health Care Act on minority populations, the Health Care Justice Campaign will host a community roundtable at Champaign Public Library on Monday, March 14th. And it's just one of a series of community roundtables being held around the state, with other sessions being held at Springfield, Bloomington, Bourbonus, Joliet, Rock Island, and Peoria during this month. The Health Care Justice Campaign, a part of the Campaign for Better Health Care, plans to use community input and suggestions and to include them in a report to the Illinois Legislature later this month. According to the organization's downstate organizing coordinator, Josephine Underwood, the discussion at the Champaign Public Library's Robeson Conference Room will be from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. this coming Monday and will be open and free to the public.
Thousands of workers at a Yamaha motorcycle factory in Vietnam were on strike Tuesday, March 8th, demanding higher pay and benefits, a company official said, as consumers struggle with double-digit inflation. About 3,000 employees from the Yamaha motor plant in Hanoi walked off the job on Monday, said the official, who refused to give his name. Management told the other 2,000 workers to stay home Tuesday while discussions continued with the union, he said. Vietnam bans labor unions that are independent of the ruling Communist Party. Workers are seeking an increase in the basic monthly salary from 1.65 million dong, which is the equivalent of $78.57 a month, to 2.03 million dong, along with a rise in their housing and other social allowances, the official said. The company had already agreed to a pay rise for some workers, but that was before the government increased the price of subsidized gas by 18% in late February, he added. After the fuel prices rose, electricity rates increased by 15% on March 1st, adding to the worries of citizens trying to cope with this. Vietnam's inflation reached 12.31% last month, according to official data, far higher than in neighboring states, although rising consumer prices are emerging as a top concern also for policymakers throughout Asia.
I have a comment. Yeah, this is really a sad thing, and this is where globalism isn't really an ism. It's just exploitism is what it should be called, because 150 years ago to 100 years ago, maybe longer than that, Europe and the United States went through industrialization. We know how to do it. We know how middle classes are made. Excuse me, I would rather say middle income working classes than middle class. We know how that happens. And all that the globalists have done, they could have gotten together. They could have helped these countries. They could have created a decent living for these people, but instead they just greedily exploited them. And that's black globalism, I'll call that. It's just terrible. It's inexcusable, and the people who've perpetrated it definitely should not be running things. I mean, they're bringing it back home, folks. That's true.
Okay, do we have any more news stories here? If not, we're going to go to a short musical break, and then we'll come back with Tom Thomas's poem of the week. This next piece is called Sons of Molly Maguire by Cy Kahn, who actually is a labor organizer as well as a musician who we actually interviewed here on the Labor Hour, I think about a year ago or so. So anyway, we'll be right back. This is Illinois World Labor Hour on listener-supported community radio station WEFT in Champaign, Illinois.
Out in the darkness, down at the breaker, close on the midnight hour, steadily working, quietly leaving, trailing a thin line of powder. The little Schuylkill Valley tan is all lit up tonight by flames that lick like tongues from the breaker fire. The tight-lipped coal and iron police won't get much sleep tonight, looking for the sons of Molly Maguire. Out in the tavern, banded together, strong men are hiding their sorrow. Over at Pottstown, they're at the prison, 10 men are hanging tomorrow. I only tried to organize the men I worked among, but I'm hanging in the morning, will you miss me? And Monday early, so they say, the mines will open back, the coal and iron police are drinking whiskey. Out in the darkness, standing together, 10 men are lined on the gallows, holding a red rose, waiting for sunrise, King of the Mollies, Jack Kehoe. The trap is sprung and Molly's sons are traveling into time, murdered by the man who hoped to hang her. But the unborn souls of Union men are all with her tonight, and the Pennsylvania pits are dark with anger.
We are now at that portion of the Illinois World Labor Hour, the Cultural Corner, with Tom Thomas's brand new poem of the week, A Testament to Mothers.
It's a tribute to mothers.
Tribute to mothers, I'm sorry.
Throughout all time, women have trod alongside men across the sod, across the river valleys deep, over mountains high and steep. Both genders built our land, you know, as side by side the two did go. Yet once the saddest thing we saw, when fools wrote our civil law, was that a woman could not vote, though wood and water she could tote. Then some fiery heroine stood to teach us that was just no good. From Diana to Aphrodite, Lily Langtry to Anne Feeney, goddesses and muses' daughters weep and sing to stop the slaughters. But more and more women's voices will be needed to win their choices. Maybe it's time that motherhood took us over for our own good. A woman leader might bring the peace by making all the false wars cease. She might bring all our children back from an abyss so deep and black. Motherhood might balance our bills and make sure Grandpa gets his pills and teach all kids their ABCs and wipe out most of the world's disease. And no, a woman president would not have an Iraq event. Men could not live without women, and women not live without men. So let's have true equality entering our new century. Work hard for a peace that is good. Trust the instincts of motherhood. A tribute to mothers was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on March 6, 2006, 5 years ago, and was brought to you live today, March 12, 2011, on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, Community Radio for East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Tune in this Sunday and every Sunday on Comcast Channel 6 or Bannon Television for Labor's Worldview with host Jim Iman. Again, that's this Sunday and every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. on Comcast Channel 6. Okay, we basically today we got kind of a three-tier program here, maybe even more, in the sense that we're in the middle of Women's History Month here in March, and also this happens to be the Saturday before St. Patrick's Day, which in the past in the Labor Hour we've always done like a segment to issues of Irish American labor history, as well as even more actual issues, Irish and political issues in Ireland. And of course, in the past we've covered James Connolly. It's overlapped it since basically he was in the United States for many years as an organizer for the Industrial Workers of the World, and then went back to Ireland and was part of the Easter Uprising of 1916. Sadly enough, of course, as we've commented on the shows in the past, the eventual outcome of the successful Irish Revolution would not have been to James Connolly's liking, considering that basically they just traded a class of British capitalists for a class of Irish capitalists as the rulers, which is not at all the vision that Connolly had for a free Ireland. But anyway, Jason has a little segment here on a woman who's of Irish descent, who was a very activist in the labor movement. So I'm going to turn it over to Jason here. Jason?
Yes. Today, a couple segments that I think relate well to women's and also to labor history. Today is the 99th anniversary of the successful conclusion of the Bread and Roses strike in Lawrence, Massachusetts, that the Industrial Workers of the World had led, and was a very dramatic strike in which women played an extremely significant role in as workers and in various leaders in the IWW in the early 20th century. Lawrence had been really the textile capital in the United States and was really the main industry in the town, and yet workers had been paid quite poorly on average. Among the 22,000 textile workers there had been paid on average less than $9 a week, and you had an enormous amount of child labor and also whole families really working in the mills, and it was a very multi-ethnic environment as well, with a couple dozen different ethnicities represented, and it was very difficult in order to organize. But the IWW, especially led by a couple experienced organizers that had been active in, especially on the West Coast, Joseph Ettore and Arturo Giovannitti had come in and were able to, especially using local organizers and many women, to galvanize workers to go on strike starting in January of 1912. And they came up with an awful lot of innovative tactics, and especially with the sympathies of plenty of others, including women who were from outside of the city, and it was a tactic borrowed from French and Italian strikers that because people were so poor, they were shipping their children out into to be housed with sympathetic families in Philadelphia and in New York. And many of the children who were evaluated and assessed for health, among them, it was noted that only four of nearly 100 of the children who were shipped out had underwear and were so poor that their overcoats and their basic clothing were basically rags. And this was something that the police tried to put a stop to, especially most famously when a trainload of children was going to Philadelphia on February 24th. The police had stopped them at the station and brutally beat women and children, including causing two pregnant women to miscarry, which brought an enormous amount of attention, negative scrutiny on the town, the police, and especially the textile owners, who eventually ended up having to sue for peace, if you will, which was 99 years ago today, and end up settling for many of the demands that workers wanted, which was a 54-hour week. Yes, that's 54-hour week, time and a quarter for overtime, and also eventually the elimination of child labor. So that was 99 years ago today. Also important to note, too, that among many women labor activists that we could talk about, I think one important good one who also was Irish and really was involved in so many different things was a woman named Leonora O'Reilly, who was born to a laboring family in 1870. And her father, John, died when she was three, making the situation for the family even more destitute. And her mother, Winifred, was a dressmaker and exposed Leonora to various cultural influences at work and also in the rich political center in New York City, taking her to Cooper's Union, where eventually she ended up influenced by people like the radical Catholic priest Edward McGlynn and also various anarchist circles. She herself started working when she was 11, attaching collars to dresses, and worked full-time in a factory when she was 13 afterwards. She joined the Knights of Labor when she was 16. And was active in various circles and was one of the founding members of the Women's Trade Union League, which allied itself with working women and also with plenty of middle-class and progressive women to enact various labor changes and also to agitate for women's suffrage, which she was active in, especially later come 1918. She really did pretty much exclusively. She was involved in various intellectual circles as an important labor speaker. She was a great orator. She was someone who helped lead and was involved in the strike in 1910 at the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory, which after it was after the fire had occurred in late March in 1911, she was a volunteer investigator after the deaths of 146 workers. She was involved in the Socialist Party and also was actively involved in the NAACP and really devoted her life to a couple main things: labor organizing, women's suffrage, and her mother. She never married, and she herself had considerable health problems that caused her to die early at the age of 57, but really devoted her life to family, to work and organizing workers, and to equality for women. Just an amazing individual.
Well, thanks a lot. And, you know, we also have to remember that in this month of women's history, about the great struggle it took for women in this country to get the vote. You know, of course, you know, the corporate media tries to, I mean, this is a similar thing what they do with Martin Luther King every year. They you know, they sanitize the whole image. They rewrite just basically leave out a lot of the real history and stuff. And likewise with, the women getting the right to vote. I mean, they, of course, try to imply that a bunch of enlightened politicians decided it was the right thing to do. Well, in fact, I mean, women had to get out there and really struggle in the streets and protest. And in fact, the authorities brutally, brutally repressed these women. The classic cases when they were picketing the White House when Woodrow Wilson was president. A lot of these women were picked up by the D.C. police and taken to jail, and they were beaten and tortured. And I repeat that, beaten and tortured by the Washington, D.C. police. And this was a policy. I mean, so, you know, this is, you know, again, part of our history here. That, of course, the corporate media never wants to repeat, or very, very, very seldom.
Dave, you mentioned Martin Luther King, and I think it was A. Trap Brown that said, "Nobody would listen to Martin Luther King if it wasn't for the standing behind him with a firebomb.
Well, there's been a lot of discussion on that. You know, I guess it goes back to the whole thing of, you know, what the ruling class does to us. They play good cop, bad cop, you know. They say, you know, if you don't like the Republicans, you need to vote for us. And if you don't like what we do once we get into office as far as a slow strangle instead of a full frontal assault, then your only choice is to get the Republicans back. But anyway, Bill, I'm going to take a little music break. When we come back, I'd like to talk to you about a subject that's been on kind of your mind lately, partly in regards to rumors about the possible general strike that has been at least talked about in Wisconsin. So anyway, we will be right back.
And thoughts of tomorrow. Oh, 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 I wish I was back home in Derry. Oh, 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 I wish I was back home in Derry. I curse them to hell as our bow was a swell. Our ship danced like a moth in the firelight. White horses rode high as the devil passed by, taking souls to Hades by twilight. 3 weeks out to sea, we were now 43, our comrades we buried each morning. And in our own slime we were lost in a time, an endless night without dawning. Oh,
okay, that was a band out of Chicago called Bluestack, and the name of the song was 1803 Derry, and the song's in regards to the failed uprising in 1802-03 by Wolfetone, who has notoriety in Irish history of actually uniting Irish and Catholics against British rule. Anyway, one thing that a lot of people of Irish descent have in common with African Americans is we both had bad experiences on slave and prison ships, and this is what, of course, this song's referring to. Of course, there's an old saying that your ancestors, if they lived in Australia, they got caught and sent on a prison ship. If you're, you know, of Irish descent living in the United States or Canada, you beat the authorities to the punch and got on the ship before they could catch you. But anyway, we want to go now into sort of the topic that's been kind of floating around in you know, Wisconsin here, is the possibility of talk, at least, of a possible general strike. And Bill, you've kind of been having this on your mind, and also some discussion on Facebook, I believe.
Well, yeah. Well, actually, for a few years now, I've been my whole idea is, see, like, well, like most of the people in this room, you know, in particular Dave, I spend a lot of my time with actual blue-collar people, and which really, I'm very frustrated because, for one thing, when they went to school, they all hate. I'm generalizing too much, but many people just really hate history. Okay, and I think history is a really important thing to know. As a matter of fact, what have we been talking about today? Quite a bit. History right here. Well, yeah, because they are forced to learn dates and names. They aren't told the stories. Number two, nobody teaches any kind of civics classes anymore. I remember when I was young, you always heard about the countervailing powers in a society,
mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why we have three branches of government, and that's why we have unions versus corporations or countervailing powers. That's all been lost.
Yes.
In fact, To get into something a little further, when I was taking public relations, there's a big theory in there. It was called public interest liberalism, which is basically the idea that the United States of America is a place that's up for grabs between various public interest groups. And public interest groups aren't just unions. Public interest groups aren't just black people. Public interest groups aren't just women. Corporations are real hardcore public interest groups. And the problem is, there's a lot of people right now on Facebook. We have this one group that's called Call for a General Strike. And it's put together by my good Facebook friend, Terry Lee. I've never met before in person, but she's a really cool person, and I have enjoyed, you know, interacting with her over computers anyway. And she popped up today, something about a general strike at the end of April, you know, and we've had this group going for about 2 weeks, or is a little bit fewer than 600 people on it. And what I keep going over and over and over, both in that group and in other places, is that, well, how many tens of millions of people, if you wanted to have a nationwide general strike, would you have to mobilize? And how would you do that? And, you know, that can't happen. There's another group on Facebook that wants a general strike on July 4th. Well, it's not going to happen. You know, the thing is, and this is, you have to get out of the academic, the university, and the downtown ghettos and get out of your bubble. If you look at what's going on in Wisconsin right now, one of the things I keep bringing up about public employees is that they are more educated than the general population. And you've got tens of thousands of teachers who are doing these demonstrations. And that's a big difference, man. And you got to think about the person who's stocking the shelves at the grocery store, the person that's working in the convenience store, the poor sucker that's working down here at the awful collegiate cap and gown sweatshop where I worked when I was 16 and 17. You know, people like that.
I worked
that.
There when I was 16 as well.
Yeah, right. And you know what I'm talking about. That place, yeah. I mean, they hired developmentally disabled people. That's a good thing, but it's not good to make them work in warehouses and stuff, you know. But it's just, you got to think about this. You got to think about all of these neighborhoods in town. You got to think about the East Urbana out there around Scottswood. You got to think about the north end of Champaign. You got to think about the enclaves even on the west sides of town. You know, all you have to do is get the census data. One year, a long time ago, I didn't have any construction work, and I got this job for the Roper Polling Company. You know, they're not as famous, but they're like Gallup. And basically what this was more of a marketing thing, even though they did ask some questions. And they had all these statistical areas laid out, and I had to get so many women, so many men, blah, 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 in various neighborhoods. And it was like I'd go from one, you know, it'd be a poor neighborhood, then I'd be in a blue-collar working neighborhood, then I'd be more of a petit bourgeois middle-class neighborhood, and then I'd be way out in the Devonshire neighborhood. And you know what I find out? It's like the poorer the people are, the more they want to talk to you. And when you get out in Devonshire, it's like nobody wants to talk to you.
Uh-huh.
It's the same thing. I used to go out to the blues gigs out at the Malibu, mm-hmm. which is mainly a blue-collar black crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And those people, they would love it when I come up and give them a schedule for this radio station because somebody was paying attention to them. You go to the Sweet Corn Festival, and there's all these middle-class white people, and they act like it's too big of a problem to carry around a piece of paper. You know, and that's just what I'm saying, man. I know, because I'll talk to activists, and they'll be, oh, I don't want people knocking on my door. Well, yeah, that's because you're a middle-class white person, and people are always trying to sell you something or get money from you. No, and I just, that's the only way, man. These people, the vast majority of blue-collar people I know, they aren't sitting around watching CNN. There's a big hubbub now about the right wing showing all of these anti-union commercials on the news networks. Well, the only people seeing them, I mean, if you look at how many people actually watch these news networks, it's a minuscule audience. I mean, there aren't as many people who watch CNN in a whole week as there are that watches some really popular American Idol or something in one night.
Yeah, indeed.
You know, and you're not going to get to these people by being on CNN or Fox. Fox News is nothing. Fox News, major people watch that. My dad's 92 years old. He watches Fox News. You know, but the thing is, and then there's another problem. Now, there is one way to get to people, and that is radio, but it's not WEFT. I don't know. I've spent years, and I finally quit doing it, years and years and years, telling people on construction jobs about this radio show. Every Monday, oh, well, I forgot about it. Oh, well, I was out running errands. You know, there's a particular group of people that listen to this radio show, and I got to live with that. It's not like we're going to sit here and say and announce a general strike, and then all the working people in Champaign are going to walk off their job.
You know, Bill, I agree. And I found, though, it's kind of a self-perpetuating thing in the sense that, you know, maybe if there was more contact door-to-door with people, got them more involved, you know, and that therefore they would more likely begin to listen to programs like we have on WEFT, you know, especially like, you know, our public, like, for instance, our program here, Labor Hour, or like Neil's over on WRFU and other things. But it's kind of a, I guess that's a term I'm trying to find. It's a spiral. I mean, in the sense that it's kind of a self-defeating spiral in a way, and how to overcome it. But I think events, as people's lives, and when something hits them hard and it hits them in the groin, if you will, as far as their livelihood and stuff, that's when people really start taking an interest, usually.
Listen, to give you an example, man, when I first met Mike Griffin, I never thought that he'd turn into the flaming radical that he is now.
Uh-huh.
And that was during the lockout.
Strike. Lockout, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for those of you who don't, oh, okay. Maybe that's my friend Ed Rodden, who went to Indianapolis this weekend.
Okay, well.
Or, I mean, I went to Indianapolis Thursday.
Okay. Hello, you're on the air.
Jim Iman.
Oh,
hey, Jim, how you doing?
My friend Jim Iman.
Okay. I would like to give you a little background information on Gloria Hayes.
Oh, yes, please do.
She is the poster girl.
This is, by the way, I'm sorry, let me interrupt you for just a second, Jim. Gloria Hayes was the woman that called in at the very top of the hour, giving us a live report from Madison, Wisconsin. So, okay, Jim, go ahead.
Yes. Oh, hold on. Fuck.
Never mind.
Hello, are you there?
Well, by the way, until Jim comes back, I just wanted to point out here on this little thread on Facebook, and I know I'm talking about Facebook a lot, but we're not going to organize a revolution in the United States only through Facebook.
Okay, anyway, I'm here.
Oh, here he goes. Okay, Jim's sorry. Back. Okay, go ahead, Jim.
Okay, sorry, the phone got unplugged. Gloria Hayes has become the poster girl, literally, of the uprising in Madison. Her picture has been on Tom Hartman for weeks.
Really?
I first saw her on Democracy Now! When they did a crowd scan. She stands out in any crowd. She's just the picture of a resistance fighter. She's an individual anarchist. I've known her since the 70s.
She's a registered nurse by profession, isn't she?
That's correct.
Uh-huh.
And, she's really a special person. And, she was an air shifter for WORT for years.
Okay, that's
which is our real sibling station in
yes,
Madison, Wisconsin.
Yes, community station in Madison.
Know, community
yes.
radio.
Mm-hmm.
Laura Flanders and Amy Goodman were all based out of WORT with the coverage up there, and so she's had radio experience. She's just a real hellion, and I really love her. But, you know, she's been interviewed by the New York Times. She's been on radio. She's been interviewed in Burlington, Vermont, and the list goes on.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a real star.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought I'd check in and say that. And it was a real good interview, good show. And thanks for taking my call.
Oh, sure, Jim. Take care.
Okay, just real quick
that
here.
That kind of fits in with what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, well, here we got another caller here. Wow. Hello, you're on the air.
Must have okay. been. Okay, anyway, but somebody here says, relative to what Bill said, that was me, we had 500,000 people marching in D.C., Washington, D.C., of course, three times during the Bush years.
Mm-hmm.
No coverage.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, man, I was out on a job. I got to work Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, it's not like there was everybody on this crew of like 20 union people, some of them from St. Louis, not buzzing about what was going on in Madison, Wisconsin. No. One guy, oh, I'm going to go to Daytona, you know, and, you know, I brought it up a couple of times. You know, people were somewhat aware of it, and they were like, oh, yeah, the unions, people, we got. It's, that's just it, folks. I mean, there's a lot of problems here. Part of it is our unions themselves who refuse to educate their membership. You know why? Because they don't want activist members. They're afraid you're going to get out of hand, you know.
I think all these points are well taken, Bill, especially when you're talking about the public role that people need to have. One thing that I do think is worth considering in terms of the possibility of a general strike, or at least this, and I do think it connects to what you're talking about in particular locations, is that Dan Labatt has talked about recently quite a bit about the rolling general strikes in Ontario that occurred, I believe, in 1996, and they were organized along sectoral lines really over the span of about a week and a half, and that this is something that's a bit more doable if you're looking at teachers one day, public sector workers, say, of building workers from universities another, nurses a third, fourth and fifth of, you know, being people who are in different sectors who then can couple their support with each other, but also can do things, maybe if not on the same scale that is being